This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdahl. True story. One day, my son and I, he was seven maybe, were walking past a spinning studio, one of those bicycle exercise places, and he looked at me and he said, "Dad, why don't they just ride their bikes outside?" I didn't then, and I still don't have an answer, but what we were looking at through that window wasn't so much an exercise class as it was a gold mine. Because between the flywheels and the CrossFits and the cardio bars and the pop physiques and just plain old strapping on a pair of sneakers and going for a run, fitness, writ large, is what the Wall Street types like to call bankable. That's the proposition in Jason Kelly's new book about the fitness economy. It's called Sweat Equity. Jason, thanks for coming into the studio.
It's great to be with you, Kai.
The money is unbelievable. $3.4 trillion all in, you say fitness is worth in this country.
Well, and it's what's so interesting about it, I think, is this idea that it has moved from activity to lifestyle. And once it moves to a lifestyle, then you're not just talking about buying a pair of shoes and buying a pair of shorts. You're talking about what you eat, where you go on vacation, who you hang out with. It's just this all-consuming thing that once you start to live this, a lot of your disposable income goes toward that. And that's when it becomes an economy.
How did we get here? Because I had Phil Knight, the founder of Nike, on the show a couple of weeks ago. And he, in 1962 or 4, whatever it was selling $8,000 worth of running shoes out of the back of his car. And now it's this.
It's this, and it's largely because of this generational shift, I think. If you go back to the 80s, you know, that's when you see Jane Fonda and Richard Simmons sort of come on the scene, right? And the videotapes. And and one thing that I think goes underappreciated is when Title IX gets instituted, suddenly there's
the law that required equal opportunity in athletics.
Exactly. Yeah. So equal opportunity in athletics means that not just boys, girls grow up through secondary school and into college. And so suddenly you have people who were much fitter and are effectively sort of addicted to exercise.
There is also a mind and body thing going on here. And, you know, it's quasi-religious. Mm-hmm. It is almost culty in some ways. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, it is a symptom of our times in many ways, right? I mean, we are an anxiety-ridden, stressed-out people here, especially in the urban centers of the United States. You know, there have been a lot of studies around millennials especially not going to a lot of organized religion, but they are finding a lot of community in their social groups, and a lot of those social groups are manifesting around fitness boutiques, running clubs, cycling clubs. And part of it is people feel better after the exercise. It calms them down. And there's a lot of science around that. You know, you go for a run, you clear your head, you just sort of feel better. You feel like you can deal with your life a little better.
And you get into it. And one of my favorite anecdotes in this book is people tattooing the little Iron Man symbol on themselves. I mean, people are like branding themselves literally with the symbol of their exercise.
Literally branding themselves. Iron Man was sort of the first wave of that. But I mean, even with Tough Mudder, some of the gyms, I mean, people are really getting into it and they're self-identifying. And that's this whole notion that it's not just something you do, it's who you are. And you want to be seen as this sort of person who does it. One of my early tip-offs, you know, I've been covering Wall Street for a number of years. And when I started dealing with all the private equity guys and all the investment bankers, I started to notice that instead of wearing Rolexes, they were wearing Timex Ironman watches.
Oh, man.
Because they want to be identified as people who do those sorts of things.
As long as you're talking about it, wearables and Fitbits and that whole deal.
Absolutely. And the wearables is such an interesting window in, and technology in general has been a huge accelerant here. People love to measure things.
Speaking of which, you've got your Fitbit
I've got my Fitbit
how many
on.
How many steps today?
12,986.
Nice.
So I'm doing okay. I've got a 15,000 goal.
Oh, do you? All right.
I mean,
fine.
I'm in Los Angeles. So
overachiever. Fine.
I need to figure out a way to walk. Yeah. Went on a beautiful run this morning.
There you go.
But going back to what you were asking about in terms of the mindfulness piece, a lot of the social piece comes in some ways as a reaction to technology. You know, we have all of these sort of superficial relationships, and there is a deep craving for human interaction. And so people aren't just exercising in their basement. They're seeking out other like-minded people. And that's one of the real reasons that people will pay $25, $30, $35, $40 to go to a spinning class.
You and I are talking $35, $40 to go to a spinning class. Companies and businesses in this sector are talking ginormous amounts of money. Ironman sold for, did I I read it in here? $1 billion almost?
That's exactly right. A very accomplished Ironman, a guy named Jesse Dubé, who I interviewed for the book, was a principal at Providence Equity Partners, highly accomplished athlete, and he essentially saw this opportunity to make an investment. They run Ironman, World Triathlon Corp. They expand it dramatically. And a Chinese company, Dalian Wanda, the same folks who own AMC, come in and buy it. And now they are putting on the first Chinese Ironman races.
And can you imagine you get 1.3 billion people or some fraction thereof to pay $100 to run your race, right?
The numbers start to get pretty big. Yeah.
Jason Kelly is the New York bureau chief at Bloomberg. His book about the new economy of mind and body is called Sweat Equity. Jason, thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.